This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to The Kevin Kelly Show, exclusively here on placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. And now, here's your host, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly.
When you're on a holiday, you can't find the words to say.
Well, it's almost 4th of July, so I think it's close enough to wish everyone a very happy 4th of July. Except if you're from Canada, then it's July 1st. And if you're from another country, I apologize. I'm not familiar with the day in which you celebrate your independence. But anyway, this is the Kevin Kelly Show here on the Place to Be Nation. I am your host, Kevin Kelly. You can find us everywhere. In fact, our producer, JR, will probably join us in a few moments to tell us how you can find the Kevin Kelly Show each and every episode. Believe it or not, fans, this is episode number 38. That means over the past 76 weeks or so, we've been turning out consistently average podcast programming. But not because of the efforts of my cohorts, and that would be Dan McGinn, and the ever-present producer extraordinaire, Justin Rosero. JR, hello, hello, how are you?
I'm good, Double K, how are you?
I'm good. It was a kind of a quiet weekend for wrestling. For the first time in 5 weeks, I was off, and I was home, so it was kind of weird. And there wasn't much news going on in the world of professional wrestling. There was a little bit of stuff going on with TNA. We'll touch on that. But this was like the weird weekend when I didn't have wrestling and I didn't know what to do. So I was kind of like caught in between. I slept a lot. And it rained like hell on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So we really couldn't do much but watch some movies and relax. And I actually felt like a quote-unquote somewhat normal person over the weekend, end quote. But it was a strange, strange time, to say the least. Now, we haven't talked since Final or since Best in the World, have we?
No, I don't think so.
Did you get a chance to check out the show?
I have not yet. I'm sorry.
You're not a friend.
No, that's fine. I'm just a coworker.
Just a coworker. We're work friends.
That's it. You get the occasional drink.
The occasional the reviews were the reviews were good, huh?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, definitely.
And we got a new world champion in Jay Lethal. It was the best match I've ever seen.
I was going to say, now you said something to me that I think would be interesting talk here to open the show, and that was, yes, you said this is the best match you've ever seen live, like seated in the arena. Because I said, what about Bret Hart and Stone Cold from WrestleMania 13? You said, well, you were backstage for that. So what right. What and was like your previous best that you were in the arena for?
That's a good question. And I hedge my bet on this. Like, and Carino and I were talking about it after the show. It's like, I know this is the best match that I've ever called. That's easy to say. Mm-hmm. Because then I have like a distinct recollection.
I don't know.
Now, it was different than Steen and Generico.
Was it better than Triple H and Buddy Landell from Heat from 1999 or whatever the match
was? I wish I would have gotten a chance to call that, Jim.
You did. But go ahead.
It was better than, you know, different than Elgin, Davey Richards, which is another great match I got to call. But was this really like the best match live that I've ever seen in my life? And you asked me that question. Well, what did it supplant? What did it take the place of? And the problem is I can't think of what was ahead of it because I never put anything in that context before. Mm. I've never walked away from a match saying, gosh, that's the best match I've ever seen.
Now, was the story and who was involved a big part of that? Or are you talking just from pure work rate, brawl? Like, was it the aesthetic part of it, or was it the whole package? Was it the fact that it was Jay Lethal, you know, finally wins the big one, wins the world title, unifies the belts, spoiler, you know, defeats Jay Briscoe, who had been undefeated for over a year or whatever it is. Was that a big part of what made it so great in your mind, like that energy, or was it just, are you talking just from a pure wrestling performance?
I think that it's the entire package. At the center, at its core, was a fundamentally and emotionally perfect match. Like, nothing was out of place. Nothing was mistimed. Nothing went on too long. Nothing was cut short. In fact, it was an odd match where it had the opposite of run-ins. It had ejections. There was one ejection 30 seconds into the match. Both Dijak and Diesel got tossed. Then later on, Truth Martini got thrown out. So at the end, it was just two men left standing. A huge part of this match and why I think it's the best match I've ever seen is the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd was off the charts hot from the start. The cold open that the pay-per-view started with, and then we played again right before the introductions, right before the the wrestlers made their way to the ring. That set the tone. And everything knew that it was exactly right. Everybody just felt like the timing of everything was exactly right. You know, it was the two guys at their absolute peak whose title reigns had reached the exact perfect time. Another element, too, was their parents on opposite corners behind the barricades. So Briscoe's parents were to my right, Lethal's parents across diagonally to my left. They could have stared at each other across the corners of the ring if they wanted to. Just consistently leading, especially Lethal's parents, leading the cheers the entire time. Two great families, I said during the pay-per-view broadcast, two great families who did an awesome job raising two phenomenal sons who have grown up to become two fantastic champions. And that's not BS, that's truth. So for all of those reasons, I think that match is the best match I've ever seen. Now, you put it in great company when you say Bret Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin. And a lot of why that match was so great was the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
There was a different level of symbolism with that match. That was more about the changing of the guard and the turning of one page and the beginning of another and the passing of the torch. So an entirely different story. And this was strictly about competition, the win and the loss, whose title would be, you know, which champion would reign supreme. It was Hogan and Warrior more than Bret Andre.
Right. Okay.
And
you mean Bret?
Bret Austin as Hogan Warrior. Let me get this straight.
Yep.
It was more Hogan Warrior WrestleMania 6.
Right.
Than it was Bret Austin from WrestleMania 13.
Right. The only reason I had brought up Bret Austin was because you were there.
And because I had just said that it was like the greatest match I'd ever seen.
Right. And to me,
a few weeks ago on the podcast.
Right. But even beyond that, even if I didn't know you already thought that, me just going through my catalog of shows that you were around for, that would have been the one I would have said anyway.
I watched that backstage. And so I wasn't in the arena to experience it.
Right.
That added to my, and the reason that I make that distinction is because I think that skews it a little bit in the favor of the match that I saw at Best in the World. So I'm not hedging my bet and I'm not backtracking because Carino and I both said it. It's like, I want to say it's the best match that I've ever seen because I can't think of anything else that was better, but gosh, I'm putting it up there. I'm really going out on a limb here by making this statement.
Mm-hmm.
And I said it first to Carino, said I was thinking the exact same thing. I'm going through this whole Rolodex in my mind, trying to think of a match that was better. And I just can't. So put it this way. It's in rare company. It is in rarefied air.
I mean, there has to be some crush matches from 96 that you called that are close. Fourth week of a Raw taping.
Yeah, I mean, the Yokozuna Barry Horowitz match that I called during my audition, that was just quintessential catch as catch can professional wrestling at mm-hmm. its finest.
Hey, big man, little man, can't beat that.
Great story.
So that aside, how has the Destination America thing been going? Experiment? Well, what's the feeling backstage? Good partnership? Any complaints? Any issues?
No. There's no complaints at all. It's a from our standpoint, you know, kind of the boots on the ground standpoint, it hasn't changed a thing because we're not taping anything special for them. We're not doing anything different. We're taping the same number of episodes of television. We're doing the same number of, you know, pay-per-view or, you know, coming up Death Before Dishonor Friday, July 24th. That's an internet pay-per-view. We're not doing anything special for Destination America yet. We might. We don't know. And but all indication is it's going pretty well. We don't really know what the numbers. None of us know what the numbers mean. Somebody sent me the numbers and they were like, hey, did you see the ratings? Nope. Well, here are the numbers. I'm like, yeah, so what does that mean?
Well, I think it's good, right? Because like we talked about, I mean, there's probably not too many people double dipping, right? So I think it's good because you can add in whoever's watching on Destination America to whoever's watching syndicated. And now all of a sudden you've, you know, increased your audience without spending another dime, really. So it's
exactly. I think a lot of young guys are very thrilled that they get to have their parents or their family see them, whereas before they might not have. Because they may not have had Destination, or they may not have had a Sinclair station in their local market, but their families, their friends, their parents get to see it on Destination America now. So people are very thrilled for that regard.
And I do know that last week's show, I mean, was easily considered, I caught most of it, was the best, you know, best hour of wrestling of the week anywhere. ROH easily won that hands down. And I think a big part of that has been the partnership and relationship with New Japan. Still seems to be going very well. So anything there we can talk about? Just still kind of chugging along. Everything's looking good.
Oh, I think there's going to be a lot more stuff. We've announced the return of Shinsuke Nakamura and Okada and Kushida coming back for the MCU Park show, Field of Honor. We announced the first match today,
which is
Time Splitters. So that's Alex Shelley and Kushida against the Briscoes. So that'll be great. And I've had a peek at a rough draft that Nigel had sent out for the card, and it looks pretty good. So
all right.
I think everybody's going to be pretty darn happy if everything goes as planned. But the relationship is expected to continue, and there's no indication that they're dissatisfied with us, and we're certainly not dissatisfied with them.
And now, this is how good I am at setting up segues for you, because we could have two topics that could easily have been segued off of this: a partnership between two promotions, or the Land of the Rising Sun, which is where we're going to turn first, and that is the upcoming WWE Network show special, the house show from Japan. Brock Lesnar is competing, and the story that's out there now, or that had circulated, was that the reason he's on the show is he wanted a trip to Japan to go visit some people, and he said, all right, I'll wrestle, so they'll pay for the trip. So they decided to air that live, which I think is the perfect thing what the network should be doing, a live house show, 5:30 in the morning on the 4th of July from Japan. It'll be a lot of fun. It's a Saturday, so you're not feeling like you're getting up and then you're going to go to work or anything like that. You can really, you know, either stay up Friday night or get up Saturday morning. And or it'll be, of course, archived as well, and we'll re-air on the network at a couple different spots. So it is 5:30 a.m. replays at 2 p.m., 8 p.m., and 11 p.m., and also available on demand when you want to watch it after it airs. So here's the card, Kev. I want your thoughts on this. 7 matches announced as of right now. The Lucha Dragons will take on the New Day. Cesaro will battle Diego of the Matadores. Paige versus Naomi versus Nikki Bella in a 3-way. John Cena teams with Dolph Ziggler, the recently re-signed Dolph Ziggler, to take on King Barrett and Kane. Neville takes on Chris Jericho, and then the two big matches, and you know, one you can argue is big just because of one guy, and that's Kofi Kingston versus Brock Lesnar, which is an odd one on paper, but is probably just a chance for Brock to, you know, assert his dominance. And that was a rumor. That match being announced here was what led to lots of rumors of people thinking Kofi might have won Money in the Bank a few weeks ago and was going to lose to Lesnar here, or Lesnar would take the briefcase from him. But the big match on the card is Kevin Owens defending the NXT title against Finn Balor. And I want your thoughts here, Kev. Do you think this is where they do the switch? Because they've really been building up Balor on NXT. I don't know if you've been watching, but they've been doing these video packages similar to Mick Foley in 1997, like really telling his backstory, showing all this footage, really putting him over very, very hard. And the fact that Owens has now lost to Cena, so this wouldn't be his first loss, to me, this screams like they want to make a big deal for the network, a big deal for this Japanese house show. I think Balor takes the belt here, and then Owens moves on to full-time you know, leaves NXT for good after this.
I agree with you 100%. I think this is what they will do. And Balor is, I mean, again, he made his name and his reputation competing in Japan. So I think this is, you know, it's going to be a very receptive crowd. Owens will have a tremendous gripe afterward, but Balor is going to walk out the NXT champion. What goes on last?
I got to think it's that.
Where do they put Brock? Do they put Brock before, like, you know, halfway through? Do they have him be the first half main event? Or do they have him try to follow Owens and Balor?
No, I think he's in the middle. I mean, he's only fighting Kofi. So to me, that doesn't scream like main events. I'd seen a... And Dolph and that tag match doesn't either. So I think Balor Owens to me is clearly the match they're promoting the most. Plus, if you think about it, in the network world, NXT is like the showcase, you know? So that kind of makes sense since it's on the network. NXT is the big show that's on the network, that would be the final match. I think that'll be it. I think they'll do the big title change. Like you said, Balor coming home to Japan, basically.
Yeah.
I don't see Brock Lesnar, Kofi Kingston main eventing the show.
Oh, hang on. There's news here. Financial news from the world. Looks as if Greece has been bailed out. Oh, wow. The million-dollar man, Ted DiBiase, has bailed out Greece.
Well, and Virgil stands somewhere angrily.
Wait, this is kayfabe news. Never mind.
Okay.
False alarm. Saw the headline and I laughed. It's all seemed lost for the bankrupt Greece government until DiBiase dispatched his muscular manservant, Virgil, to the country with dozens of briefcases stuffed with cash.
Say
DiBiase, everybody's got a price, and mine is salty, delicious feta.
Okay.
That is so great.
There you go.
But it's, so anyway, yes. Well, we could all hope that would be true. So that's going to be fun. You know, I grew up a tennis fan. I know it's probably shocking, JR. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that, but listen, I say that because when I was a tennis fan, when I was growing up, we had pretty awesome tennis.
Yeah.
We had John McEnroe and Bjorn Borg and Jimmy Connors and guys that were throwing rackets and flipping stuff and screaming and yelling. Anyway, I grew up with breakfast at Wimbledon, thought it was always the coolest thing. So now fans will get breakfast in Japan.
Yep.
With the WWE on the network. I think it's awesome. I love the idea, like you said, that bringing live events to the network is a great way to go.
Agreed.
I don't think it's going to hurt business at all. It's going to introduce fans to the live event experience and, again, get more content to the network. So this is perfect. Win, 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 win all the way around.
Agreed. I'm looking forward to it. I can't say I'll be up at 5:30 to watch, but I probably won't be up too much later after that, so I will check it out and see what's all the hype, see if it matches. And again, I think Balor takes the title here. I mean, I don't see a better situation or better setup for them to get the title off of Owens than this right here.
Exactly.
All right, so one last piece of news I wanted to cover, Kev, and that is the partnership between Global Force and TNA. We don't have to spend too much time on this, but last week, news broke that Jarrett was going to show up at Impact. Him and his wife Karen cut a promo, very emotional. I thought the promo was pretty good. It was felt very heartfelt and real and long. But they talked about his legacy within TNA, how he created it, gave his blood for it, all this stuff. And then he ended up competing on the pay-per-view last night and winning the TNA newly crowned King of the Mountain title by winning the King of the Mountain match. And leading many to speculate that, there's going to be some kind of partnership or some kind of invasion angle right out of the gate here for Global Force. What are your thoughts on all this? I know you think Jarrett's a pretty carny as they come, which he is, but
I didn't want him on the podcast. I mean, that we could say here. I was like, no, I'll talk to Jim Ross. I'm good.
But anyway,
no,
is it the right move for Global Force to attach itself to TNA at this point?
Yeah, of course it is. How could they lose?
Well, you can lose by sinking. I mean, that would be like if, when Ring of Honor started, they hooked up with WCW in 2001 or something like that. You know what I mean?
We've got it right here. Oh, no.
Right? I mean, that would have been, who was the first Ring of Honor champion, whatever? Like, if Brian Danielson had showed up on Nitro and created the Ring of Honor Nitro title.
Elix Skipper.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. There's a stinker on TNA right now that was not even close to what the stink was on WCW in 2000 and 2001. But I digress. Go ahead.
I think that it's perfect for both companies. I don't see any problem with it at all, and I hope that it encourages more business. I hope that it gets more fans through the turnstiles and into the seats and eyeballs on the TV, because that's what it's all about. I don't like the way TNA is doing their TV. And I don't mean it from a open to close thing. I just think that when you tape so many weeks in a row, I think continuity has to suffer. I just think that it's very difficult to tell that cohesive story, you know, in episodic fashion, kind of week after week after week. And it certainly is difficult for the fan to digest. Mm-hmm. And I just think some things are a little lacking, especially when you had to shoot a pay-per-view kind of out of order.
Right.
Because you had already taped like 2 or 3 weeks of TV following it. That's kind of my biggest thing. But hey, man, production schedules are production schedules. So we've had to tackle some hurdles with Ring of Honor and production schedule being what it is. And you got to move some stuff around. You got to do this and do that. So I get it from that standpoint. I just don't like it.
Who's spending $50 on a TNA pay-per-view at this point? That's what I want to know. I mean, honestly, I'm not even trying to be an asshole about it. But I mean, who is spending that much money on these pay-per-views for this company?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not really sure. And there's a lot of always a lot of question with that. Like, well, does WWE Network hurt the traditional pay-per-view model? I don't know. Does it depend on the quality of the show?
Did you feel Best in the World was overpriced?
What was it, $34.95?
$45 for HD. A little much.
Maybe $10.
I think if you go 25, you know, 25 for standard and like $32.95 for HD or something, you're probably a little bit better.
I could have gone $34.95 for HD, maybe $39.90. That's peaking, though.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to spend, but that's just me. Like, I'm not going to spend that kind of money on anything.
Right.
A concert ticket, I see what concerts go for now. Like, you got to be kidding me. I'll sit home. But I'm kind of inherently cheap, so I don't know. Maybe I'm not the best one to ask.
I'm even to the point, too, in my life with sports, where unless it's, obviously I have the Providence season tickets, so that's because they're, you know, I'm a big fan, and it's affordable, it's cheap, ends up being like $14 a game. But outside of that, or like a special event, like when I went to the Big East tournament, I'm kind of past the point even of spending money. Like, I'm kind of done even going to like football games unless it's like free because of the absurd, you know, $100-something, and it's just too much going on. I'd rather watch on Red Zone or at a bar or something.
Exactly.
You know, if you're talking more than $25 for me at this point for a sporting event, I'm probably not going. Now, for wrestling, live, to pay-per-view, I mean, you know, over the last couple of years, I've attended the Royal Rumble the last 2 years and WrestleMania. Like, to me, if it's this big special event and we got a big group going and it becomes a thing, I'm fine spending money on that. Hall of Fame type of stuff. As Dan mentions, it's our one-year anniversary of going to Money in the Bank last year, so I'm okay there. But that's part of the live experience. So to me, and I think, you know, I think a big part of it is even like what bites Ring of Honor in the ass is that your weekly TV is so good and the matches you offer are so good that sometimes it's hard to say, you know, do I want to drop $50 on this pay-per-view? It's going to be really good, but I also see so much other good wrestling in Ring of Honor on TV and everywhere else at this point that it's almost to the point where, you know, when they started making TV so good, it hurt house shows, right? They took the focus off of house shows, and now you almost wonder how much of it is hurting pay-per-views as well, because you're getting so many big matches with so much international talent, all these big, you know, dream matches, and that goes for Raw, too, where the pay-per-views really have to find a hook to stand out to make you want to spend that kind of money.
It is a, I guess it's the age-old thing. You've got to have the eyes watching it in order to tell people that they're of when your next show is and that they need to buy it. You need to make it seem important, but at the same time, you have to give tremendous value to your your bread and butter, which is your weekly television show. So it, you know, and talking with some, you know, some of the pay-per-view higher ups, you know, I think they know that the pay-per-view industry is on borrowed time, and they're just looking to produce the best events that they possibly can, because they know what, you know, where the competition is now, and it's Netflix and it's Hulu and streaming and all this and that. I mean, you think about the revenue that used to generate for cable companies before there was Netflix and Hulu and all these others. If you wanted to watch a movie on demand, you went to your cable company.
Right.
You went to your satellite provider, or you went to the video store. The whole game has changed. Everything is different. So, you know, we'll see how things evolve over time. I know that we've got a pretty special guest tonight. I'm really looking forward to talking to our pal, Todd Sinclair, who's the best referee in professional wrestling. And he happens to be ROH's senior official.
Better than Dick Worley?
No, Dick Worley, again, okay, in his day, was a fine, fine official.
Yeah.
But Dick Worley, circa 2015, can't carry a candle to our pal Todd. So so we'll be talking to Todd. Did you know Todd is great friends with Seth Rollins?
That's cool. We'll talk about it, I'm sure.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about
his
love of gaming.
Was he the first one to receive that text? You know, that text?
Oh, the text.
I'll have to ask him if he was on that distribution list.
Were you, did you happen to see it? And
he took it out? It. Out.
We'll also get some stories about Bobby Cruz, because Todd is a friend, and I put it in quotes because I don't think Todd really wants to identify too closely with Bobby Cruz.
I like how Bobby
Bobby
gets so defensive on Twitter when he talks about how miserable he is.
Do you want to know this?
But he is miserable.
Well, yes, and he is defensive.
Oh God,
he's defensive about everything.
Does he have any positive qualities? I don't see him.
He's a good dad.
Okay.
He's a really good dad. Yes, he is an awesome dad. His two girls are phenomenal.
He's a grouse.
And he does a great job.
A grouse.
He is a grouse. Yes, a curmudgeon. And we'll
he's
talk
all the nasty things I say about the Grinch and the Grinch theme song.
It's a good question. When are we going to get callers on this show?
Yeah, we were talking about that. I think maybe not the next one. I think we should really build it. So how about a month from today? So two more episodes. We'll set it up to have live call-ins.
Well, why do we bury it in the middle of summer? Why don't we do this as like a big, you know, fall season spectacular?
All right.
I'm just delaying. It's fun, though. It'll be
you
fun.
You don't have to do anything. What are you delaying? I'm the one who's going to have to do all the work. You're
yeah, that's right. I'm trying to make it easy for you. No. I think that's great.
Okay.
I think it's fantastic.
September. You want to do it in September? We'll do it in September.
Yeah, before we know it, it'll be September.
I know.
Summer has... okay, so I'm checking the boxes here. We've done the beginning. We've done the topic of the day. And I guess we should now transition to what? This would be the time where you could tell
everybody. I'm the man. I'm going to tell them where to find the Kevin Kelly Show. You can subscribe to the brand new Kevin Kelly Show dedicated feed on iTunes. All the latest episodes will automatically download to your Apple devices. In addition, fans can visit PlayStation.com and click on the Kevin Kelly Show banner or the PTBN podcast banner on the right-hand side. You can also visit Stitcher.com, subscribe to the Place to Be podcast, or download the Place to Be Nation podcast app, hitting up placetobe.podbean.com/mobile on your iPhone or iPad. And also be sure to follow us on Twitter at @place2bnation, @realkevinkelly. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/kevinkellyshow, PTBN. If you have any questions or suggestions for any of us here at the show, kevinkellyshow@placetobenation.com.
I would love to see, you know, suggestion box would be a lot of fun sometimes.
Okay. I got
one. I think that
would
be a good segment. All right. Hey, right now. Are we any closer... changing my mind about Hogan and Austin? Are you any closer to changing your mind about Hogan and Austin and WrestleMania?
Austin, I'm shaking on. I'm shaky on Austin, but I said yes, so I'm going to stick with it. Hogan, I'm bullish on. I saw a news rumor today that Vince wants to load up Mania, and there's a rumor of a Cena-Hogan match right now on paper. So I'm staying strong on Hogan. I'm backing off a bit on Austin, and I do think Daniel Bryan is still done as a wrestler.
Yeah. I think that the likelihood of Stone Cold Steve Austin wrestling at WrestleMania this year is almost as slight. The chances, the odds are almost as small as Donald Trump waving the Mexican flag at the Univision television studio. It ain't happening.
I really hope Trump at least lasts in this election to one debate. He's going to make it to one debate.
Oh, he's he's can't miss television right now.
Right.
I'm so entertained. I'm so disgusted and done, like, with all things political. Like, I used to be a big politics junkie and really get into the issues. And now it's like, wait a minute, the news that is done today, it doesn't even talk about the issues. It's just about, you know, the screaming and the posturing and all this and that. It's crap. But anyway, Hogan, I am. So Austin is a no, but Hogan is a yes for me. I really think so. I want Hogan to be done with this Gawker lawsuit about the sex tape.
You might shut them down, man. You might take that whole operation down.
He might, but if I'm Vince, I want that done because I don't want that to be the first question. Hey, Hulk Hogan, you're coming back to WrestleMania, but what about this Gawker lawsuit? I'd want that in the rearview mirror as quickly as possible. So if that is not settled or if that is still ongoing litigation, I might change my mind. And I sadly think that Daniel Bryan has wrestled his last match. So,
poor guy.
But... anyway, okay, so we've told the fans where they can find the Kevin Kelly Show. We will talk to our pal Todd Sinclair in just a few moments. And later on, we'll have some fun, some games, and we'll do sort of a recap of the NBA draft. We'll give all the love in the world for the Knicks draft pick because no one else will give them any love.
HG Pennypacker.
We will. We'll talk a little bit of MLB. We'll talk some, the trade deadline and we want to get into the whole Royals controversy. Are they stuffing the ballot box?
It's like Taboo Tuesday over there in Kansas City.
For the All-Star game. Hurry up, quick, vote early and often. And we'll cover all that later on. But right now we're going to take a quick timeout. Then we'll come back. Todd Sinclair is our guest here on the 38th edition of the Kevin Kelly Show on the Place to Be Nation and our website home. PlaceToBeNation.com. Stay with us.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Yeah, this one right here goes out to all the babies, mamas.
All right, we're back here on the Kevin Kelly Show. And the podcast, of course, you can download on iTunes. You can subscribe to it. You can get it through the website. You can even run down the street. You can knock on your neighbor's door and you can ask them for it, and they'll give it to you in a convenient cup. It's so, so great. And our guest is just like your neighbor. He's always there for you. He's our pal. He's the best referee in professional wrestling. And I'm not just saying that because he's a great friend of mine, because it's the truth, damn it. And it's Todd Sinclair. Todd, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm all right. How's it going, Kevin?
Good. Hey, you know you're the best referee in professional wrestling, right?
I thank you for that. I know I'm pretty good. I don't want to say I'm the best because I'm honest. I do everything I can to be the best.
Well, it is a again, it's so great getting the chance to see what you do. And I, for one, other than a few occasions, mostly for the bad, I never really paid a lot of attention to the referee. And I guess, isn't that kind of the role of the ref? To be there but not be seen?
Yeah, absolutely. When you're watching wrestling, you're not supposed to watch the ref. The referee is just a background piece, just part of the what's going on, and then you only see the ref when they're needed. Other than that, the referee should fade into the background. So if you're not focusing on the ref, that's good.
I tell you that you are the best referee in professional wrestling. I am not alone in that assertion. And I say that because everything that you do is right. And there are just, again, it's the art of, I think we're beyond, I was cutting the grass the other day. You know, my infamous lawn, Todd, that is.
Oh, the greenest lawn in history. If anybody has not seen pictures of Kevin's lawn, please go to Facebook. They've got to be on Facebook, right?
I'm going to put some new ones up because it's majestic.
So it is majestic.
I'm spinning around on the lawnmower the other day, and I'm thinking of the era that we're in professional wrestling now. And it really is, I think, more about the appreciation of the art than ever before. And I think that was at the crux of, and that's one of the reasons why it's like now we could take a step back and we could say, damn, Todd Sinclair is a really great referee. And the match, let's I'm transitioning into a question here, so you can help me perhaps. After the main event at Best in the World, Carino and I, Diner, back to the hotel, and I said to him, Steve, I think the match with Lethal and Briscoe tonight was the best match I ever saw. And he said, I was thinking the exact same thing too. Neither of us wanted to say that was the case, because there has to be something that may have been better, and maybe it was just because of the immediacy. It was the most recent great match that we've ever seen. But where would you put that match in all of the other great matches that you've seen up close and personal? Where does Lethal and Briscoe fit in?
It's absolutely in the top three. Absolutely. It was so good. And now we're talking about it a couple weeks later. You just have this feeling, just by you talking about the match, just in that little question there, I just had this like great feeling in my gut of how I felt as I was in there and watching it. And when I'm in the ring, I'm the referee. I have a job to do, but I'm also watching it as a fan does. And I think you and Steve do the same thing as you're calling it. It's not just like dissecting and this. You have that part of you that's still a wrestling fan. And as I was in the ring watching that match, I felt so amazing with what they were doing, the story they were telling. And then once the three count hit, I have goosebumps right now, but the eruption of the fans, but also of just what I felt inside, that was a great moment and a great story they told for 40 minutes. I think it's definitely top three, absolutely top three.
What else is in your personal top three? What are the other two?
And I would say one of my absolute favorite matches, and I actually ref this, was Bryan Danielson against Kenta, which was a match from New York. And I think the reason for that one that I feel is one of the greatest matches I've ever reffed and ever seen was that Brian, this was in the middle of a time period when Brian was the ROH champion, but he was hurt. His shoulder was really, really bad. And he was gutting out, I think for a good 4 or 5 months, gutting out to be able to continue working in the role that he had to play until he could take some time off. And the story that those two told, and I remember in the back, Brian was saying, kick me in my bad shoulder. He's telling Kenta. Now, everybody knows Kenta's kicks. Hideo Itami, I think his name is now in NXT. His kicks are brutal. And Brian was saying, look, this is what we need to tell. My shoulder's hurt. The world knows my shoulder's hurt. Please focus on my shoulder. And we'll tell that story. And the emotion that was going on during that match was something I don't think I've ever felt, because of the pain that was Brian was going through, and I knew what he was going through. That's one of the absolute top matches I've ever seen in ref. And then, I mean, another one for me too was Samoa Joe and Kenta Kobashi. The emotion that was in that match just was crazy, off the charts. So I would say those are maybe the top three. For me.
Yeah, I seeked out the Joe Kobashi match over the weekend just to kind of put some historical perspective to it. And I definitely could see where that comparison would be made just from an emotion standpoint. The crowd, I was saying to JR earlier in the show, the crowd was such a unique dynamic in that they never really slowed down, and they only picked up steam as the Lethal Briscoe match went along, which really enhanced it. Like, I was comparing it to Bret Hart and Stone Cold because I was there for that. I watched it on the monitor backstage, but, you know, still I was there. And that match has withstood the test of time and all the great, you know, comparison factors. But that crowd in Chicago willing Austin and turning Bret, you know, that dynamic made that match, you know, really what it was. There have been some stinkeroos, though, in your career, huh? And not because of you, right? No, you don't ref all good matches, do you?
They're all pretty great. No, everybody has stinkers. Everybody has bad nights.
All right, let's name names. Come on. What was the...
all right, you going to put me on the spot on this one?
I got to put you on the spot. Listen, everybody knows it was a bad match, right? It's not like you're going to say that... you know, some great match really turned out to be a stinker in your book. You're going to go and you're going to remind us of one that we've tried to forget.
Well, I don't know how many people have actually seen this one. It's an ROH match, but I want to say it was on like a daytime card in New Jersey. And it was, I hate calling out names because it was just a bad day for guys. And I remember in the middle of this match, just wanting to count three on purpose, just so we could all get out of there.
And all right, well, don't name names. If you don't want to name names.
I'll name names just because, you know, it's the Kevin Kelly show and you put me on the spot, I will. And I feel bad, but I will say it was a match between Homicide and Antonio Banks, who went on to become MVP. And I can't put a pinpoint on why I just did not enjoy that match, but I just remember in the middle of it just really wanting to get out of the ring. Because things just didn't go well. And look at the success that those guys had. You know, it's not like the worst wrestlers in history. They're great wrestlers. They just had a bad night. And I as well had a bad night in reffing it. So
it's
there's
funny
one calling out names.
There you go. Well, I'll make sure I'm going to get D on the horn and then I'll send MVP a note. Let them know.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You publicly called them out. It's been fun getting to get to know you over the past, I guess, 4 or 5 years now that we've worked together. But you have a friendship, a bond with a member of the broadcast team that predates me. And I'm not talking about Steve Corino. I'm talking about the one and the only Bobby Cruz. You and he are like brothers, aren't you? Simpatico. Mano y mano.
Bobby Cruz is my road wife for sure.
JR just sent the note. Gross. He's gross.
Bobby Cruz is gross. I say he's a rotten human being. That's what
he's rotten.
Describe this Bobby Cruz. He's rotten. He's my road wife, and he's been that way for about 11 years. We've been traveling. I think maybe 11 or 12 years would bring him honor. And, yeah, he's a disgusting human overall, but he is the closest I have. I have four brothers in my real life, but he's the closest I have from the wrestling business to my brother. And I feel the same way I feel about my brother. Sometimes I feel about Bobby Cruz, where you really deep down, you love him to death, but a lot of times you can't stand them. And that's the relationship I have with Bobby. I think he's a great guy overall. He's a great dad with his kids. He just does some really terrible things and says some terrible things, and we fight like brothers do on the road constantly.
You hate being late, don't you?
Oh, it's the worst. I hate it. And if you have a place to be at a certain time and you're told to be that, or you say, I will be there at noon, you be there. And if you can't be there, you have the courtesy to say, I'm sorry, I'm not here at 12. I will be 20 minutes late. I will be 30 minutes late. You have the courtesy to tell people. Nothing gets me than more than being late and not being courtesy, you know, having the courtesy to tell someone if you are going to. It deep down angers me to no end.
You're winning points with Justin Rosero. JR, jump in here real quick, because you've struck a chord with JR in terms of punctuality, and it's a big thing. JR?
Yeah, well, two things. I think Bobby Cruz is an asshole, so I agree with Todd there. and secondly, yes, be on time. You say you're going to be there at a certain time, you know? Show some respect. That person's waiting, or they're trying to be somewhere, and then to, you know, just deliberately, or even if it's inadvertently, it's still rude. Show up, you know, 30, 40 minutes late without any kind of heads up, just thinking you're on your own time and you run the world is very annoying and very disrespectful. So I'm with Todd on this one.
Right on.
Oh, I'm with Todd on just about everything. In fact, I find myself in complete agreement with him
okay.
on all things except recording NHL games and then not wanting to know the results of live sporting events for days. Days, Todd.
Well, Kevin, you've been in the wrestling business for 20 years, maybe more, correct?
Yeah, 25 now.
25 years. You've been on the road a lot of that time, and for extended periods. With ROH, we're away for a weekend, but when you were WWE, you were probably away for 5 days at some times.
Right.
And these games, okay, we're talking about the Boston Bruins. I'm a huge hockey fan. I'm a huge fan of the Boston Bruins. When these games are on, we are in the ring or traveling, and we can't see them. So I have a TiVo. And people call it a DVR now, but I still stick with TiVo. I'm a big proponent of TiVo. And I TiVo games so I can watch them at my leisure. And I don't want them ruined, you know, the score. So say a game is on a Friday. We have a show on Friday in Baltimore. When I come home on Sunday, I'd like to watch the Friday game and not know what's going on and not have it spoiled. Now, I will say I take it a little bit overboard with... If I'm home on a Wednesday and there's a Wednesday game, the game is at 7, I'll TiVo it and start it at 8:30 so I can skip the commercials. So that maybe you might have me on. But as far as wanting to watch stuff while we're on the road, and then I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
there is a call out quote now, by the way, and I see your point of view. There is a call out quote which JR does during the recordings of these interviews, and this, as I told you, this show will be posted later on tonight. So expect to get a note, a nasty gram, and maybe a donut driven in your yard by Bobby Cruz. It says, real Bobby Cruz is my road wife. He is rotten. He does terrible things. Todd Sinclair on the new Kevin Kelly show.
Come on.
Well, wait a minute. Those are three things that you said.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, but now I'm going to have to hear it from him.
I know.
And then we'll fight again like brothers.
Exactly. But, you know, the idea of Ring of Honor now being in a more prominent position, not, you know, beyond the Sinclair deal, now, of course, on Destination America and even NESN up in your region of the country. How has, or has it at all, Has the increased television exposure changed anything for Todd Sinclair?
You know where it has changed it? And I've been doing this for 14 years. I've been a ref for 14 years. My dad went to one of my first matches, and then he hasn't seen me ref since. My dad actually now believes me that I'm a referee. My grandmother can now watch it on NESN. She believes me that I'm a referee. Like, just not having the program in the Boston area was not allowing my family to even know that I did this. They know I travel every week, but well, I mean, for all they know, I'm traveling on some sort of a road show with a bunch of gypsies, and who knows, which I guess wrestling kind of is, but that's where it's changed for me, is my family. They actually now are able to see it. They're actually able to enjoy it. My grandmother has such amazing perspective on when she was watching these last, you know, like over the last month, these matches that I don't think anybody else would have. She just comes back with a one-liner. She literally, I think it was this past weekend. So she watched on Sunday night, last night, because I was just actually over my grandmother's. She watched Roderick Strong against Nakamura. And she said, they really, really look like they're hurting each other. And I said, yeah, they really are. I mean, they're not hurting each other, so they're going to be maimed. But this stuff is an impact sport. And she said, I didn't like the man in the red pants. I said, well, okay, why? Because he had long hair. And a 90-year-old woman in 2015, that is a complete legitimate reason to not like a man. It's because he has long hair.
Yeah, that's legit, because that was the delineation between someone who was good and a good boy and a bad boy.
Right.
And Nakamura, he kind of broke the mold.
Right, for sure.
That's awesome. And I know that getting the, because 14 years, you're doing this a long time, but it's been, I know it's got to feel good on a personal level for that satisfaction. Yeah, it's great that your family validates what you do, but for you to be able to see yourself, what does it mean to you to see yourself on television or to be recognized for your work?
It means a ton. And I know with Ring of Honor, well, I've been with Ring of Honor for almost 12 years. We've always had the hardcore fans. People know about us. But we haven't had that exposure nationally that, you know, that hundreds of thousands of people can watch us. And in here, now they can. Now, I think from what I saw on ratings, like we're in over 300, 400,000 households, and we're finally showing the world what we do. And that is such a great feeling, because we're not the hidden gem of pro wrestling anymore. We're out there for people to see and to show people what we're all about, and we're the best pro wrestling there is.
You know, there've been so many great wrestlers from all over the world that have come through Ring of Honor, but it seems like the preponderance of them, especially over the last few years, have come from the New England area. Can you lend me any insight as to why that might be? Why so many great wrestlers from New England are in Ring of Honor and throughout the wrestling world?
I really think a lot of it comes down to the training. And you know, some of these guys who have been wrestling a long time before they get the exposure, like let's say Hansen right now, who's in War Machine in Ring of Honor. He's been wrestling for a good 12 years, and only really got his exposure through Ring of Honor over the last couple. But he was trained in Chaotic Wrestling, but also partially by Killer Kowalski, and the training that he had and all the work that he did over the years, finally, like they gave him that foundation. And I think in New England, that's what guys have, is that foundation. You got Mike Bennett, who's been helped and trained a lot by Bob Evans. Even if it's not the same school, because there are a handful of schools up here, guys are coming out of here with such a good foundation and such a good amount of knowledge and experience that once they're seen by the officials at Ring of Honor, let's say that where we find a lot of these guys at the trial seminars, once they're seen, they're impressing. Donovan Dijak, he impresses once you see him. The problem is the guys weren't known and they weren't seen up until this recent era. But you've got Taven, you've got Bennett, you had Tommaso Ciampa came out of here. And even from other companies, you got Kofi Kingston came out of here. Mizdow came out of here. There's a whole bunch of guys, and they all have that foundation. I think that's the strong point of it.
I know that even going back to probably just before you got into wrestling, like 1998, 99, Jim Cornette introduced me to Tony Rumble and a lot of the guys that were on shows which were sort of connected with WWF shows at the time. There would be like a couple of WWF matches on top, and then underneath it would be a lot of the guys from Rumble. But they were all Kowalski trainees, and you know, I'm blanking out. Mike Hollow what was his old partner's name? Duke Staunton.
Yeah, Duke Staunton. Yep.
And there was so much good training that was going on, so much good wrestling, and it was guys I'd never heard of. And I had come from Florida, where I thought that was like the best wrestling in the world. Oh my gosh, these Florida guys are great, and there was a lot of good talent in Florida. But even the opening match guys in New England were like really good. And it was damn like Slick Wagner Brown and two other guys were in like some crazy 6-man kind of scramble thing to kick off the deal. And you know, he was like a rookie. And I'm like, wow. Just again, a lot. John Walters, et cetera, et cetera. So it looks like it's going to continue to propagate and continue to. You know, the development isn't stopping because Fury seems to be doing a pretty good job with that Chaotic School.
Yeah, he took over from when the Chaotic School and Stella Kowalski School kind of went out of, like, we're not going to be in the training business anymore. Fury took it right over and did BCSP. And Fury's, the guys that are coming out of Fury's, Dijak is one of them, have the exact same great foundation that these other guys have and have had for years around here. It really what is, like, as far as New England goes, and I've said this to New England guys a lot over the years, you've got to get out of New England to show the world who you are. If you stick around these six states, you ain't going anywhere. And when guys finally take that advice, they impress. So, yeah, Fury keeps it going. Bob Evans keeps it going. He's got seminars and stuff that he's helping out, and it's great stuff.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. How did you so you're the best referee in professional wrestling. We've already established that. but okay, so how did you become a referee? Where did the journey start for you?
I started on a whim. It was actually by accident.
On a whim?
Yeah, just like, oh, okay, well, wow, let's do this. No, I grew up watching, like you had said, like you really didn't pay attention to the ref, and that's what most people do when they watch pro wrestling. But that wasn't what I did. I somehow, for some reason, gravitated to watching referees. So I would watch the action that was in the ring, but I always focused on what the ref was doing from when I was little. And I even remember during the Attitude Era, I'd have friends over. We'd be watching Raw, and before every match, I would announce in a Howard Finkel voice, "Your referee is Jack Doan." Like, I would always just focus. I'd know the refs, and it was always my love, but I never really even gave it a shot. I was actually terrified of doing it. I have a real fear of public speaking and being in front of people, and so I never even thought of giving a referee a shot. So we would go to the local shows, and we went to a show in Clinton, Massachusetts, 2001. And there were me and my two friends we went to the show. We bought a ticket. We were sitting in the show, and one of our friends, George Carroll, who is actually helping with Ring of Honor right now, was wrestling on the show. And he knew us from going to old ECW shows. And at intermission, he came out to say hello to us. And one of my friends, Eric Arsenault, said, "Hey, why don't you have Pants," which my nickname is Fat Pants for anyone who's not aware, "but why don't you have Pants ref your match?" And that's how I got into the wrestling business. I paid a ticket to watch the first half, and then I ref the match in the second. I borrowed a ref shirt. I was wearing jean shorts, and I ref my first match there. And that it took a lot of convincing to get me to do it. But when I did it, that gave me the confidence to say, I can actually give this a try. And from there, I enrolled in the Chaotic Wrestling School from there. But I didn't have any training when I ref my first match. It really was a whim. It was a, how did this happen type of thing. And I don't think I ever would have given it a shot if it wasn't for those guys pushing me to do it.
There has to be footage of this match somewhere.
I have a tape, yeah. I don't think I own a VCR anymore, but I do have a VHS tape.
I think we can get it converted. I would love to see that. Just for the jean shorts and for George Carroll wrestling. That would be...
It's a sight to see, for sure.
Oh, that would be... We'll have an army of volunteers willing to convert that match. and we can spread it for the world to see. So what happened when you went to Chaotic? Obviously, I mean, did you enroll to be a referee? Or did they say, well, we'll train you as a wrestler?
Yeah, no, I enrolled to be a ref. But the tuition was the same. I didn't get a break on the tuition.
Of course not.
But I also... Yeah, no, I mean, why would I? But it was important for me. When I enrolled, I decided I'm going to learn how to wrestle. I'm going to do everything that these guys are doing that I physically can do. There's some things that I didn't feel I could physically do. But everything that they learned as going to a wrestling school to be a pro wrestler, I did all the drills. I did all the running the ropes a million times and having bruises on my armpits and on my hip. I had concussions from taking bumps wrong. I did everything. And the reason why I decided to do that, and this is advice for any ref that's coming up or anybody who wants to get into the wrestling business to be a ref. I did that to learn not to ever wrestle a match. I had never had any thought or hope to do that, but I wanted to learn how to think like a wrestler. Because a lot of the stuff that they're doing is positioning and, you know, you're knowing what your opponent is doing. And if I can do that, you know, as a referee, if I know in my mind what I think these two guys in the ring are going to do next, I can do my job accordingly and base it off of that. So I learned how to wrestle. I never have ever wrestled a match. I did a Royal Rumble, I think, once or twice. But, I went full blown into learning how to do everything because that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to know how to do it so I could be better at my job as a ref.
And the first time that I met you was at a local show. And can you describe your feelings towards me that night?
I had no problem with you. Bobby Cruz didn't like you. But I had no problem with Kevin Kelly. I was actually psyched to meet you.
Well, because I went with Bob. I went with Bob Evans, and I heckled you. And I was like, oh, I'm heckling.
Really?
And I, huh?
I don't think I remember this.
Oh, you don't. Come on. You got to remember this. I can't remember the promotion, but the promoter wore the little hat. He's a little Italian guy.
For like Primal Conflict or something.
Yeah, okay. The show was crummy, but it was a lot of young guys. It was all like the Harvard guys. Like Guy was in it.
Oh yeah, yeah, right. Yeah,
the guys that became fried. Yeah, yeah. And the best part of the first half of the show was Pete Doherty, who was drunk at the bar and got up to cut a promo, and it was awesome. And yes, so there you were refereeing like the second match, and Bob kind of Iggy's me, and he says, "Hey, give Fat Pants a hard time," and I was like, oh, "Fat Pants." That's funny. And so I started like, come on, Fat Pants. And you look out at me like, wait a minute, it's Kevin Kelly.
I blocked that completely from my mind. Oh, my God. That's amazing.
You blocked it.
You know who ran most of that show? George Carroll.
I found that out because then I kind of talked to him afterward about what a stinkeroo the show was. He was like, I was like, yeah, sorry. I think I was on something that night. I don't know what I never took drugs, but right. Maybe I, you know, was close to someone that did.
You want a quick story from that show? Just a story about Brutus Beefcake.
Oh yeah.
Brutus Beefcake is on that show. And maybe I have my shows wrong, but let's say this is the same show. Brutus Beefcake's there. And when we enter a locker room or you leave a locker room, you shake everybody's hands. So I'm going around shaking the hands of all the guys and stuff. And then Brutus Beefcake's there. So I went up to him and said, about to shake my hand. I stick my hand out, and just as I stick my hand out, he stands up and he pulls his drawers down, so he's completely naked in front of me. And I'm like, and instead of saying, all right, bye, see you later, shaking his hand and getting out of there, I got so weirded out that I turned away and I sat down in a chair looking away from him, waiting for him to not be naked. And he sat there for 20 minutes sitting there naked waiting for me to come back and say goodbye. So, a little quick story.
What a memorable night.
Oh, yeah. So one of the greatest nights of my life.
We didn't really get, we're running out of time, but I got to get into this whole Seth Rollins thing.
Yes.
Like, you're pals with him away from wrestling.
Oh, yeah,
and
sure.
It's because of your common love.
Common love of Rock Band.
Rock Band, of all things.
We love Rock Band. When Seth Rollins was in Ring of Honor, you know, sometimes you just got to break the ice with a guy to become friends. And somehow we figured out that we love playing Rock Band. And that's been the focus of most of our conversations over the years. In Rock Band on the Xbox, you can put in your friends' gamer tags and have their scores up there. So we battle each other for score supremacy. That's been our common bond for ever since I met him when he first came into Ring of Honor. Just this past weekend, he got invited because he's a bigger star than me. I don't know if anybody else knows that, but he's a much bigger star than I am. Yeah, huh. It's crazy, isn't it?
All right.
He got invited by the people who make Rock Band, Harmonix, who are great guys, to play the new Rock Band 4 that's coming out in October. And because of our bond of Rock Band, he brought me along so I could check it out too. And we had a blast playing it on Saturday for like 3 hours. It was the greatest. But yeah, we're huge Rock Band fans.
How is the new game? Is version 4 as good as the other three?
Oh yeah, it's great. It's very similar to the old ones, but they have new freestyle solos, especially on the guitar, which are hard to explain, and I actually didn't really understand it until they showed me how to do it. But instead of playing the solos note by note the way the game used to be, you can freestyle and play it how you want to, as long as you keep like a certain beat or a certain pace of the type of solo. And that's a really fun addition. But overall, the game is as solid as it was over the last, you know, 8 years or whenever they released it. It's a great game.
So we've learned a few things here over the course of the interview, that you are the best referee in professional wrestling, which everybody already knew, that Bobby Cruz, kind of hygienically gross at times, but a good dad and an overall mm-hmm. good guy, and that you and Seth Rollins are buddies and you play Rock Band together.
Yes.
And you refereed your first match in jean shorts.
That's about it. We touched it all, I think.
That's what she said. We have more ground to cover because you're a historian, and we've got to do like a different kind of long form thing if you'd ever be interested.
Yeah, for sure.
Like kind of outside of the confines of this restrictive, you know, time limit that we have here, but we could delve into histories, and I think it would be a blast for everybody to hear.
Yeah, I'm down. That sounds great. Right.
And next time you join us, you got to do your impression of we'll do it for Royal Rumble, the ring announce for the Royal Rumble. We'll do that the next time.
I think that's a great idea.
As great a ring announcer as Bobby Cruz is, and he's the best ring announcer that's active in professional wrestling now, second only to the Fink.
He's so good. He's so good.
Just the way he called the announcing the new champ at Best in the World, right? I mean, my God.
Wasn't that great? If anybody hasn't seen that yet, go back and watch. I mean, the match is fantastic, but even just listen to Bobby Cruz's announce of the end of that was perfect. So perfect.
Yeah. But as great as Bobby is, your impression of Howard Finkel is so spot on and perfect. So we'll do that the next time. But man, thank you for everything. Thanks for being my friend. Thanks for helping me along in Ring of Honor. I really appreciate all of the guidance and the friendship and everything else. So I'm looking forward to seeing this thing to the end with you, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. And thanks for reminding me that you heckled me. That really just was a nice touch. But yeah, thanks for everything over time. And we're just going to keep going. And we're just going to keep getting bigger. So I hope people jump on and watch us on Destination America or Neptune or our local Sinclair stations, because we're tearing it up.
Yep, Wednesday night on Destination America, Todd Sinclair will be refereeing. He'll be the one in the striped shirt, so you'll know him. He has nice blonde hair as well. All right, Todd, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks, pal. See you. That cream,
and now, the news the whole world is talking about. It's time for Trending Stories right here on The Kevin Kelly Show.
All right, so that's our pal Todd Sinclair. And JR, we really got to figure out something to do with Todd. Because he is not only great referee, but he's a tremendous fan with an encyclopedic-like knowledge of, you know, old WWF. So I think he could really be entertaining and different on the site.
Okay. Get him on board.
You know, that site, that Place to Be Nation site.
Yeah, that thing, that website, that's really cool. And you should check it out all the time. We had a PTBN reaction show for Slammiversary with my buddy Will and Dylan Hales from Wrestling Culture. Aaron George's Impact Wrestling review is great, so some TNA stuff. And Kevin, I think this is in your wheelhouse. So the critically acclaimed Exile on Bad Street podcast has been a fantastic show since it debuted here, 9 episodes in. And the 9th one is a 4-hour retrospective on the life and career of Buddy Landell with Chris Zellner, David Bixenspan, and Dylan Hales. Went through all the ups and downs of his career, all his different gimmicks and angles and matches and everything else. So if you're old-school wrestling fan, territories, Buddy Landell, NWA, Southern Wrestling, this is the show for you. Because these guys, you talk about encyclopedic knowledge, Zellner and the Exile crew delivered tremendous episode after tremendous episode. Lots of respect and love around the internet for this program.
Yeah, and I think they do a great job. The wrestling writing on the site, as well as the podcast content, is always consistently very, very good on this site. This is not a clip and cut and paste website at all. It is all original content. And I don't think this site, and I'm not even a part of the site. I provide a podcast for it, but the work that is done by you guys is amazing. And I don't think you get near the credit that you deserve. Because there's a bunch of hacks out there. Holy crap. Are you aware of this?
Yeah, there's a lot of hacks. A lot of them. And we pride ourselves on not going to that level. We don't do clickbait. We don't do, scrolling slideshows where you get to click 15 times. Most of our stuff is on one page. I do have a new podcast out, Kev, along with Will, Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. And Dan produces that one for us. And every episode has 3 different challenges that Will and I compete in for 30 minutes apiece. We'll have different kind of games and puzzles that we got to solve. Discussing wrestling, we've done drafts, we've rebooked months of wrestling, we have a live watch coming at our next one, so a lot of cool things, and I've really had fun doing that as I branch out some more with the podcast. And of course, still love doing my show with Scott every other Monday. We do our Vintage Vault review, so that's up there. We're doing Taboo Tuesday 2004, a week from tonight.
Ugh.
So check that out as well. A lot of comic stuff, Kevin, too. Besides wrestling, comics are the really big strong suit here. Our comic staff is top of the line. Really knowledgeable guys. They write really unique stuff, too. So right now, their half-year comics awards poll is up, so be sure to check that out. And we have tons of NBA stuff, too. So those are really, I think, our 3 big wheelhouse on the site, are the wrestling and podcasts, NBA, and comics. So I definitely recommend, if you're a big fan of those 3 things or any of those things, be sure to check us out for that and other stuff as well. Kev, one of our sponsors here on the show, Boneheads, big week for them. Tomorrow, they're opening their Boneheads Unplugged location in Fall River, Massachusetts. So location number 2 opens June 30th. It's going to be takeout and delivery only, no dine-in. But they're going to have almost a majority of the important stuff on the menu, all the wings, burgers, nachos, and a couple other things. So be sure to check that out if you're in that area of Massachusetts, Fall River, Somerset,
By the
Swansea.
Way, there's a room, Swansea, of course,
There's some weirdo on Big Brother this year who's from, he's listed as from Swansea. Brutal Bob said he's from Fall River and he claims Swansea is his home. He's an interloper.
Yeah, well, and, no one would actually admit that they're from Fall River.
Yeah.
It's not something you want to talk about.
There's also a rumor that Ring of Honor could be returning to Providence.
About time. What the hell's going on?
Well, and when that is, when that yeah. date is announced.
Okay.
We will have the pilgrimage to Mecca.
We will bring all of Ring of Honor to Boneheads.
Oh. We will have such a time at Boneheads in West Warwick. I cannot wait.
We look forward to it. So Boneheads trending lately, Kev, and I think that's a hell of a segue in of itself right there. What do you think?
If you're talking about trending, you've got to be talking about my most favorite part of the show. I love the interviews. I love the guests. I love every part of it. But my favorite is trending stories, which JR specializes in. He got a master's degree in it. And usually there's three. Sometimes there's an extra if we're good. But here's trending story number one right now on the Kevin Kelly Show.
Buffalo, right. Pretty close to where these guys were, Kev. Malone, New York. David Sweat, Richard Matt plan to head to Mexico after busting out of Clinton Correctional Facility more than 3 weeks ago, but had to improvise after the prison tailor accused of aiding them failed to show up to give them a ride, Governor Andrew Cuomo said on Monday.
Son of a bitch!
They would kill Taylor Joyce Mitchell's husband, get in the car, and drive to Mexico on the theory that Mitchell was in love with one or both of them. And they will live happily ever after, which is a fairy tale that I wasn't read as a child. Prison worker Joyce Mitchell is accused of authorities by helping Matt and Sweat in their escape. But when Mitchell failed to show, the pair had to improvise and headed north towards Canada. According to Sweat, he and Matt were together until 5 days ago, when Sweat said he decided to go on his own because the older inmate was slowing him down. A New York State trooper captured Sweat on Sunday after firing two shots at the fleeing escapee. Sweat is hospitalized in serious condition. Matt, 49, died Friday when police encountered him near Malone and fired on him. So what do you think of these guys, Kev? What do you think of their plan to go to Mexico? What do you think of how they got caught? Should they have split up earlier? Do you think it was justice that Matt ditched Sweat or Sweat ditched Matt for being older and then was able to live on and Matt bit the bullet? So maybe he was justified in his decision. Where do you think all this fell?
First of all, I think it's crap because the guy's only 1 year older than me. And let me tell you something.
If me and you are running through the jungle, I'm ditching you. I'm telling you right now.
Damn it. Really?
Sorry.
I would think you would rely on my guile and my expertise.
No.
No. Well, anyway.
Pale. You're an easy target.
It's. I've been really intrigued by this story. And I'm really glad that one of them. I was sad when the first one got shot. Not that I wanted them to not be caught, but I do want to hear this story. I want to hear the story of this woman and how they fooled her. I mean, you could find a rat anywhere, right. Okay? And this woman is a horrible woman. She's horrible looking. And that she was so enthralled with these prisoners that she was willing to throw her life away. I can't get enough of this story. I'm sad it's over. I'm glad that one of them will be alive to tell the tale. Love it.
You know, me too. And it was an interesting story. And it's funny because I have I know someone that was actually heading on vacation to that area this week. They were very worried that this thing was going to be going on still. The Mexico thing is confounding to me. Do they really think they were going to make it to Mexico? Are you
that
surprised?
Sounds like a pipe. That sounds like prison pipe dream. The thing that you say to your celly when you're in there. Hey, man, if we ever get out of here, we're going to Mexico. Yeah, man. Now, let me have some of that toilet apple wine.
Do you think, I didn't realize that's what prison was like. Do you think, were you surprised where they got caught? Did you think they would have been further along after 3 weeks?
I wondered, and this thought did occur to me, like, were they so, was the guy thinking, well, I'm making good progress. I must be in like Ohio or Indiana by now. And then he finally got shot and pinched and they're dragging him in and it's only like a 15-minute ride back to jail. I'm like, ah, damn it. This is all I made? Right. Damn it. It was all for naught, like, or did they realize that
they hadn't gone very far from a distance from the standpoint of, you know, because plans got changed and they decided to head up north to Canada. I don't know. I'm sure there's disappointment in them, but what a story, man. Absolutely what a story.
I think Vermont is where they had to get to maybe get away with this, like northern Vermont, where it's all just like woods and hippies and nothing else going on. They probably would have protected them. I mean, that to me, that's where you got to get.
Well, you got to live free or die in New Hampshire, man. It's right. You got that going for you, too. But
there, too. But if you get up to northern Vermont, maybe get into the woods, then you can kind of sneak into Canada that way. To me, they lingered too long in New York. I think they should have split up immediately, age or not. I know it's tough to all of a sudden just leave the guy and go out on its own. I'm sure it was a little bit, you know, scary at that point. But to me, it's much harder, obviously, for them to try and catch two guys working separately than both, where one is, you know, at some point likely to screw something up and bring them both down, which it sounds like was what happened.
And they do kind of look like the ghetto bushwhackers.
Yes, they definitely do.
I do see a definite Butch Miller resemblance to the guy.
They're like the indie scene bushwhackers, like with a Z, where they announce them on some indie show. So you think it's the bushwhackers, but it's not.
They're indie bushwhackers, right?
Yes, indie bushwhackers.
Those poor bastards.
Well, it was
all right.
Good run.
So we spent enough time on the first trending story, but there's more, isn't there?
You know this one, Kev?
Carefree Highway
Singer.
By Gordon Lightfoot.
There you go, Gordon Lightfoot. Sounds like an 80s jobber, doesn't it? Would have teamed with Chief J. Strongbow and Jules Youngblood
and
Gordon Lightfoot.
Right, he was the young Indian jobber.
Yes.
And he would do the war dance, shine a little bit, turn it over to Chief, tag in, kid takes the heat, Chief never gets back in.
There you go, perfect. I love that booking right there.
Say goodnight, Gordon Lightfoot.
Samsung working on a technology to let people see through giant trucks on the road. The safety truck prototype mounts a wireless camera on the front of the vehicle and live streams the view onto a giant wall of 4 video screens on the back. If you're stuck behind a large truck, you'll have a clear real-time view into oncoming traffic. You can see any obstacles or traffic that might otherwise catch you off guard. Passing trucks is tricky, particularly on two-lane roads. Samsung thinks this technology can save lives by reducing accidents. Have you seen the picture of this thing yet?
I have. It looks really, really cool.
Isn't it? It's just neat. I just want to kind of, you know, kind of wish they'd throw like a movie up on there, like at night, if there's not really a lot of traffic or something like that, you know? A little Jersey Shore.
Well, you know, it does kind of violate one rule for me, and that's don't tailgate a truck.
Yeah, but it's a huge screen. You can see it. You don't have to be right on top behind the truck, you know? A little bit of room.
All right. I kind of thought that that was like the thing, like you would really see the image well if you were right up the truck's ass. Which, to me, is like the worst place to be. You slow down, and then you could see around the truck. But anyway.
I like that. I like the idea. My only fear is I'd get, like, transfixed on it and, like, stop looking around and just watch this. You know, like when you're at a sporting event and you start watching the screen instead of what's going on in front of you. Like, I feel like I'd start doing that by accident.
I think while it's a good idea, I worry that it might do more harm than good. But I'm willing to try. I'm willing to put it out on the street and let's find out. It's the only way to find out if an invention works, JR. You've got to put
omelet,
it out on the field.
You got to break some eggs, Kev, if you want to make an omelet.
You've got to break some eggs, he says. It's exactly right. So that the truck, of course, of the future, the driver of the future, there will be no drivers. There will be just, you know, we will coast. We won't have to download anything via our devices anymore. Todd Sinclair's TiVo will be out. We'll just be able to have the chip implanted in our head.
And he'll
and
know
all
what
the
happened
will
in
just
the Bruins
appear.
Game. He won't even have to watch. He'll just know.
He will just know. Exactly right. What's left of the Bruins franchise, been all traded away, he will know.
He'll automatically get an erection when they win. That's it'll just happen.
That's how you can tell, by the way, when during the match on the Friday night and the Bruins win and Todd Sinclair has an erection.
He stops laying flat when he's counting. He just starts
does
the knees instead.
Why is he
Dick
on the
Whirly
side?
Dick Whirly style.
Dick Whirly.
Brings the
That's
whole new
what
meeting
they call
to Dick
it.
Whirly. Yeah. That's a Dick Whirly.
I'm going to go. That's going to be the new move. By the way. Call it the Dick Whirly.
The Dick Whirly. All right.
I love it so much. All right. We must press on because there is another trending story right here for you now on the Kevin Kelly Show.
I'm just going to go ahead and apologize to Steve Willie's kids right now.
Oh.
You know that classic, iconic wrestling theme song, Kevin Kelly?
No, I don't.
Jake the Snake Roberts.
Oh, I'm sorry.
His python, Damien. Would you ever wonder what may happen if a python ate a porcupine? That ever crossed your mind?
Ooh.
Well, you can wonder no more, Kev, because one of these giant snakes, which kill prey by suffocating it and then consuming it whole, recently dined on a porcupine and didn't live to brag about it. On June 14th, a cyclist riding along one of the mountain bike trails in Lake Elland Game Reserve in South Africa spotted a very engorged snake. The cyclist snapped a few photos of the gluttonous python and posted them to social media, where they quickly attracted the attention of locals who wanted to see the python themselves. Lots of people came to the park in the following days to view the swollen snake, according to Jennifer Fuller, general manager of the game reserve. At the time the photos were taken, no one knew what the snake had eaten, just that it must have had something fairly large. On the official Facebook page of the reserve, park staff and visitors speculated as to what the snake may have swallowed for dinner, suggesting everything from a small warthog to Bobby Cruz to a baby impala to an errant child.
Wow.
On Saturday, June 20th, park rangers found the python dead by the bike trail, cut it open, and had a look inside. What they found was a 30-pound porcupine. It wasn't unusual for pythons to eat porcupines, but in fact, many species of snake eat porcupine. And while a 30-pound meal may sound like too much to digest, it isn't if you are a python. As Fuller noted, pythons in the reserve have been spotted consuming even larger prey. It is still not clear if the python's spiky meal is actually responsible for the predator's death. The picture of the sliced open python, not pretty, but you can tell it's a porcupine that was inside of it. Snakes, Kev. What are your thoughts on snakes? Does it freak you out that it can swallow a porcupine whole?
I think that this snake went out blaze of glory.
I'll say.
Go big or go home.
I mean, the picture of the engorged snake alone is pretty gross, but the picture of the porcupine inside of it.
All right, I got to look at this.
Is pretty messed up as
well. He started at one end of the buffet, yes. And he was done at the end.
Got thrown out.
When he got thrown out.
Do you think there's a Twitter account for the snake by this point, as soon as it hit, they do like the fake Twitter accounts?
I got to imagine. All right, so it looks like a baby. They're pulling a baby out of him. That's not that bad. So the snake was dead?
Yeah,
he wasn't
died.
Just resting?
No, it died. They don't know they don't know if it's a porcupine that did it. The prickles.
Prickles, the porcupine, was returned to his owners.
He had a
dead.
Great life.
I think this is something that all of us in this politically correct, eat your kale and drink your vegetables world that we all live in, we need to go out, we need to enjoy life, and we need to start eating again, and we need to start living. Stop restricting yourself and enjoy life. Live life like this python. In the name of Jake the Snake Roberts, hasn't he taught us anything about living to excess? Look at all the drugs Jake the Snake Roberts did, and the man is still alive. This could be you, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm glad I had that awful tonight, then. I didn't refuse. Favorite Damien memory?
Obviously, well, the cobra. I'm sidebarring. The cobra memory of biting Macho Man, but I did not have any Jake the Snake Roberts experiences up close. Like he and I never worked together.
In the locker room and stand there until you turn around and looked at him.
I just remember him throwing lit matches at Phineas Godwin. That was kind of fun.
Hmm.
That was a good time. But
I mean, Earthquake killing Damien, that's a memorable
ooh,
moment.
Ooh, that was a good one. Yeah, I remember that.
Andre the Giant having the heart attack.
Poor Andre.
Yeah, that's some memorable ones. The one from the snake, not the real one.
Yeah.
That ended his life, I should clarify. But anyway.
Alice Cooper.
Yes, Alice Cooper. It's a good one.
I remember that. A lot of good times with the snake.
Mm-hmm.
And this poor python.
Mr. Cooper. Hang with Mr. Cooper.
Man, oh man. All right, so sometimes we have three, but is there a bonus one by chance tonight? I mean, it is close to the holiday.
It's sounded like Giant Gonzalez's theme for a minute there. At least five reported shark attacks this month have swimmers proceeding with caution as they head to the coastal beaches in North and South Carolina. In the latest incident, a beach outing in North Carolina took a harrowing turn Saturday afternoon when a 17-year-old boy was attacked by a shark. The teenager was swimming with several other people near Waves, North Carolina, when the shark attacked. The teen received various injuries to his right calf, buttocks, and both hands, according to a news release posted to the Facebook page of the Cape Hatteras National Seashore. No other swimmers were injured. Ocean Rescue Squad paramedics and National Park Service rangers rushed to the scene. A 47-year-old man was injured in a separate shark attack in the same area Friday morning. So five attacks here off the Carolina coast. What do you fear more, Kevin Kelly, being eaten by a snake or bitten by a shark?
Oh, bitten by a shark. It's not even close. The snake, I feel like I can get away from. The shark, I am in his house in the ocean.
Yep.
And not being able to see him at all times, maybe perhaps not being able to touch the bottom. Maybe if I do touch the bottom, I'm stepping on him. It's too much unknown when you're dealing with that. And a snake is a hit-and-run expert, but the shark can linger and chew your legs up. So, and there's usually more than one. So not a fan.
Yeah, I'm not even a huge ocean. I mean, I live in the ocean state, and I'm not even a huge going in the ocean fan because of my irrational fear of shark attacks that is quickly becoming rationalized through these attacks. But we can tie it all together here because John Tenta, who killed Damien the snake, also portrayed the shark in WCW. So there you go. We're going to bring it all together for you. King Carino lives in Carolina. Does he express any fear of this these attacks?
You know, I've talked to him about it, and a little bit of concern, but I think he's good. He does spend a lot of time at the beach, so and he's got a young Beck, so yeah, it's obviously obviously a concern.
Speaking of the King, Dan McGinn, are you with us?
I am. How's it going, guys?
Okay. That's fine.
Hi, Dan.
We got some news around the King, right, Mr. Carino?
What?
Yeah.
Okay, I think we've got to go to break here. Trending's topic's over for tonight. I think we reached our quota, but I want to have some time for sports, so I think we should take a break quickly, come back, we'll do some sports.
Man, what a great tease. All right, so hang tight. More to come. Kevin Kelly Show, PlaceToBeNation.com.
Trying to break me.
Place to Be Nation and Pro Wrestling Only are proud to present the PWO PTBN Podcast Network. Join us for a variety of great shows that explore all the facets of professional wrestling.
Join good old Will from Texas for our Place to Be Nation reaction shows. And Goodwill Wrestling, which has been kicking since before JR had barbecue sauce.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play and join Chad and Parv as they discuss classic NWA and WCW pay-per-view.
And take in one of our newest podcasts, Exile on Bed Street, and allow Chris Zellner to give you a history lesson about important moments in wrestling's colorful past.
Listen to Johnny, Pete, Parv, and Kelly, the titans of wrestling, as they examine in depth the history of the WWF in the 1970s and 1980s.
And then there's Brainbuster, the wrestling game show, tag teams back again, the Pro Wrestling Super Show, the All Japan Excite Series, and the Super Extreme Vault for some ECW.
You can hear all of these great podcasts and more on one feed. Remember, PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network, part of the Place to Be Nation family.
All right, we're back on the Kevin Kelly Show, and summertime heating up, of course. We've covered a lot of ground here in the hour, but the NBA draft happened last week, and I was very interested as a Knicks fan and as a basketball fan in general. JR, your overall impressions of the NBA draft as it was?
I thought it was fine. I mean, pretty by the book. The Hornets, to me, are the kind of the questionable team, because if you believe the rumors, well, that the Celtics had offered them like 4 first-round picks and like 3 other picks to move up to 9, and the Hornets turned them down. They didn't want to move back, and then they ended up taking Frank Kaminsky, who they probably could have gotten a little bit further back, you know, or then maybe moved some of those other picks to move back up It seemed like they could have done okay and not taken Kaminsky there and picked up a boatload of extra picks, because the Celtics really wanted Justice Winslow, who went to the Heat at 10 at a major steal. And as Dan McGinn will tell you, the Celtics continue to confound as they pick up another point guard. They now have like seven of them on their roster. So we'll see what they do there. I thought, you know, we went chalk early on. I like Minnesota taking Towns. I thought that was the smart choice. I think the Lakers taking Russell made sense. I think as much as he looks miserable about it, Philly taking Okafor was the right choice.
I think what we should do is merge Philly and Boston, and we could make the 70 Celtics.
Right.
Because all the frontline help is in Philly. All the guards are with the C's, and I think we can. It's a marriage made in heaven.
They do seem to match up well for a trade if they get there at some point.
Right, or a merger.
But tell me about your guy, Kristaps. What do we think of him?
Yes, Kristaps
Porzingis. Baloncesto Sevilla.
One of those. Listen, you're a Jets fan. You remember all the hype about Vernon Golston, who turned out to be a workout wonder and nothing more. Scouts have been scouting poor, you know, Kristaps since he was 14 when he turned pro in Spain. He has the makeup. He could become the next Dirk Nowitzki. Well. The Knicks were not in a win-now situation, no matter who they drafted, because it is just one player, and they need like nine more. And for Carmelo Anthony to be shooting off his mouth, first of all, it's completely proper for Carmelo Anthony to talk smack about a 19-year-old kid who was just drafted number four, because you and him have a lot in common, Carmelo. Neither of you have ever won anything. Carmelo Anthony could go away immediately, and it wouldn't be fast enough for me. I can't stand him. Why did he take the money? Because it's the money. It's the only thing he's ever been good at getting in his life. And I'm just sad. I think the kid will be fine. He's going to take time. It'll probably be on his next club, you know, after the Knicks screw him up, that he'll wind up being, you know, a decent shooter from the outside. He's got good mobility, and I like his game. Kind of reminds me of Mozgov. And I think once he fills out a little bit more, he could be a little bit like Mozgov. But overall, I thought the draft was too long.
It was long.
Time would run out for the picks, and then it would be another 5 minutes before they would announce the pick. What was going on?
I think the Knicks' long play should be to suck again this year, give this kid a year to kind of prep himself and get ready, and then get another high pick. We can get Chris Dunn. And then next year, you go forward, you know, the year after, and maybe be ready to move up. You know, they really screwed up beating the Lakers in those last couple of games. that was the biggest mistake, because they would have gotten Russell or Okafor.
I think Russell is the man. I think D'Angelo Russell is going to be the one to come out of this thing great. I also like, you know, Towns, I think, is going to be very good for Minnesota, but he's in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like Okafor. I like Okafor's game. He's a 50% free throw shooter, right? Or is that Towns?
I think it's Towns is the poor free throw guy, but I could be wrong.
One of them shot an abysmal free throw percentage. Yeah. I thought it was Okafor for some reason.
Right.
But anyway, how many frontline guys do you need, Philly? What's the plan? And the look of him dropping the jersey. Did you see that today?
he did not look happy at all. But, I mean, they're saying Embiid may miss another year anyway. So, it may fix itself. It may not even matter. For them. They would just be playing Okafor and Noel. My boy LaDante Henton signed with the Warriors for Summer League.
Perfect.
So we'll see how that goes. Hopefully he can pull a Bryce Cotton, play his way into the league. We'll see.
I'm excited for that.
Okafor, 51%, Dan says.
Yeah. Just thank you, Dan McGinn. Just rotten. Rotten. And what are you going to do? You got to put him on the bench in 20 minutes in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway. But listen, you could improve your free throw percentage, can't you?
You think so.
You would think. I know they were always like, because I lived in Orlando when Shaq was drafted, and, oh, well, he can't shoot free throws very well. We're going to work on it. He's going to shoot hundreds extra a day. And he improved his percentage from like 51 to 54. Oh, good.
Hey, that might be that one big one at the end of the game, you know?
You never know. So they had to create, you know, they created a whole rule. We had the Jordan rules, and then we had Hack-a-Shaq.
Yep.
So
we employ that weekly when I'm in my
house. What do you think about everybody opting out?
Why not? I think it makes sense. The I think LeBron doing it makes sense because he keeps setting himself up, and they said he's probably going to sign another 1-year deal because he's waiting for the big money to come in from the TV contracts in a couple of years, and it's then that they're saying he'll sign his big deal. Sounds like Love's going to get a max deal from the Cavs. Sounds like that's almost done. Who else opted out?
Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, well, that's not a surprise. There's been rumors for a while that he's going to leave. Do you think he'll go to Cleveland? Do you think he'll go Chicago? Where does he end up?
I don't think Chicago has the cap space. I'm not a certified capologist in the NBA.
You think he looks at Chicago as a chance to go home and win a ring? Maybe he takes a cut?
I don't think Riley lets him leave under any circumstances.
The Heat are set up as well. I mean, they had a great draft. Obviously, like we said, they got Justice Winslow. You know, got Dragic last year. So, I mean,
how many 6'6 wingmen are there in the NBA, though?
Yeah, Winslow's supposed to be really good, though. I mean, that's talked about as being the real steal of the draft.
I hear it, and I only saw him during the tournament. But I, you know, the comparisons to Kawhi Leonard, I don't know.
Well, if he can be even 70% of Kawhi Leonard, it's pretty
good.
Yeah,
that's true. They're only going to have Hassan for one more year, and then he's going to walk.
Muhammad?
No, not Muhammad Hassan. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
He was hot for a minute. Whiteside.
Yeah, then they got in trouble with the CW or whatever it was, UPN, and they had to bury him.
Yeah, UPN, right. No one could take a joke.
He was over. He was definitely over.
Nuclear Heat.
Although they kind of had it backwards, right? Wasn't that always the thing that he should have been the manager and Daivari should have been the worker since Daivari was better in the ring and Hassan kind of sucked?
Well, yeah, but Vince, little guy. Yeah. He can be the manager.
All right, let's talk some baseball. So your Metsies, Kev, making a run.
We're changing the name of the franchise, by the way, JR.
Yeah? To what?
The New York Mats.
Okay, I like it.
M-A-T-Z. Steven Matz, one game, wins his debut on Sunday, 3-for-3, drives in 4. No Mets player, pitcher, or position has ever driven 4 runs in his first game as a Met.
Does that say more?
And so
Mets,
therefore, he is better than Dwight Gooden and Tom Seaver, and we're renaming the franchise in his honor, the New York Mats, and we're going to retire his jersey.
So,
and why is he not the starting pitcher for the All-Star game for the National League? I'll take my question. I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks, Mike.
Well, the Mets, win a big game in August. Play a game that means something. 2.5 out behind Washington now. Minus 11 run differential, though. Not as bad as the Phillies of King Carino. Minus 123 run differential. Not good.
They're rot.
Far and away winners of the run differential, besides the Cardinals, are the Toronto Blue Jays, plus 86 in fourth place in the AL East, but only a game and a half out. So a lot of good races going on. Do your Mets hang on, Kev? Do they have what it takes? You kind of look at the rest of the landscape. They're right in the thick of the wild card. They're right in the thick of the division. Can they hang on? Do they have the reinforcements? Will they pull off a trade? There was a rumor today that they may try and look to bring Robinson Cano back to New York. Is that something you would explore?
Would I explore? Sure, absolutely, I would explore. But you have the cheapest man, in sports. And
well, how much goodwill would that buy him, right? After all these years, if you kind of put this winning product out and you say we're going to go for it, and there's a goodwill gesture, we're going to bring Robinson Cano back to New York, slap at the face of the Yankees, and we're going to take on this money because we think we can maybe make a run this year.
There is some truth to the fact that many times the Wilpons gauge success by who controls the back page of the New York papers. But they are baseball's equivalent of Scrooge McDuck and will not spend a dime to ensure that a championship product is put on the field, merely one that is just simply good enough, with enough hope for the future to keep the suckers coming back and to continue to subscribe, add to their season ticket base. That's all they care about.
If you look at the National League, besides the Cardinals, I mean, it's pretty wide open. And this is my beef with Baltimore a few years ago. When the you know, everything was wide open and they didn't pull the trigger on a big deal for an ace pitcher. And I think the Mets could be in that same position. Like, why not take a run right now when the landscape is, you know, a lot of parity? And I think the same for the Yankees this year, a team that everyone kind of counted out heading into the season. A lot of things have gone right for them, which hasn't happened over the last few years. You know, A-Rod and Teixeira bouncing back, having good years. Second best offense in baseball by runs scored, which is pretty amazing. But I look at the landscape, and outside of the Cardinals, who are the dominant teams? I mean, the Royals have been very good, and the Astros have been. We'll see if the Astros can keep it up. I do think they're built to at least have, you know, some success. I don't know if they'll keep it going. You know, the Royals as well from last year. But outside of the Royals and maybe the Cardinals, I don't see that other dominant team. I think the field is pretty open this year.
It is a very winnable league this year. It's a very it's going to be more wide open than ever before. Unpredictability. And you can look for a team. Don't, you know, I know this will warm McGinn's heart. Don't sleep on Boston. I don't think they're done yet. They're only 8 out.
Yeah, but see, there's a big difference of that. So they're 7.5 out. But the problem is, I mean, you got to think you're going to have to win at least like 87 games, right, to win this division. I mean, that's saying, and that's, you know, that's discounting that they've actually, the division has gotten much better over the last like 4 weeks or so. Like, everyone's actually playing pretty well now. Even Boston's been playing a little bit better. The problem is to get to 87 wins, the Sox would have to win 52 games. Okay. So they played 78. So that means they have, what, 84 left? So, I mean, they literally have to win like 52. They have to go like 52-30-something. I don't think they have that in them. I just don't. So it's not me as a Red Sox hater saying. It's easy to look and say they're only XX games out. But when you think of the pace a team would have to play to get to even, you know, for the Orioles or Yankees to get to 87 wins, they just need to win, you know, whatever.
The only team that has had that kind of a run this year so far, we had both the Royals and the Tigers early, and St. Louis has been on a consistent, just runaway pace this whole season. But nobody else,
right?
Everybody else has sort of come back to the pack, and it's a, you know, a 540, 560 winning percentage now that has you in the conversation for just about everything. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, so,
you know, it could be 84 wins the division in the East.
That.
It could be.
I don't see that. So St. Louis has 51-24 right now. So that's a 680 winning percentage. So you're saying the Red Sox would have to play like slightly worse than that to win the division, probably. Can they match what the Cardinals have done in the first half of the year? I don't think so.
I don't know.
I mean, I just don't think they have the talent to do it.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. And I'm not, again, I think the Orioles and the Yankees will be neck and neck down the stretch. We'll see. I just don't believe in Tampa. I question Toronto.
Never trust Toronto, man. Just like the Bills. Every year, I have a sexy pick. I never trust them till they deliver.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens there. I think that, you know, the West for me, both the American League and the National League West have been a little disappointing this year. I expected the Dodgers to be better. I expected the Giants to be worse. I can't stand the Giants, and I sort of like the Dodgers, and neither of those things have happened. I expected San Diego to be better, and that hasn't happened. And I don't know, and out West with the AL, it's a
big disappointment.
Poop. I just don't get it.
Yeah, Seattle's been bad. Texas, surprisingly, has been okay, playing 500, which is pretty good for them heading in. But Houston, I mean, you know, can they keep pace and hang on? I mean, I just saw them up close for 4 games with the Yankees. I mean, they seem to have everything that we need. We'll see if they make a big move for a player here at the deadline. You know, Indians disappointing, Tigers disappointing. But the Tigers are a team that were always willing to make a big move and make that run in the second half. So we'll see if they do that.
The Yankees are just counting down the days to when they sign Bryce Harper, aren't they?
How many more years? Can't come soon enough. I'd be interested to see if Cole Hamels goes anywhere too. I mean, you know, does Amaro do something to try and save his job, get a haul for Hamels, something desperate?
Does Amaro have any juice left? I mean, after they hired Andy McPhail.
True. Right, does McPhail say, screw it, Hamels isn't my guy. Let's get a haul now while we can. You know, I'd be curious where he would go. I mean, to me, I thought the Orioles should have made for a play for him or Cliff Lee a couple years ago when they had the chance. We'll see if they do it now. That's a team that could use a frontline starter. You know, I mean, I think the Yankees, Orioles, Blue Jays, all three in the AL East, are teams that could maybe make a run at Hamels. I mean, I don't know if the Royals would really do that. Pittsburgh, maybe. I don't know if they want to take on that money. I mean, that'd be a great year about back.
What did you think about Max Scherzer losing the perfect game on the lean-in hit-by-pitch?
I don't know. I mean,
like, was it flagrant enough to warrant a reversal call and make it ball three?
Probably, but I just don't see an ump doing that. I mean, like you said, his job's to get on base. And is it cheap? Yeah.
6-0, two outs?
Yeah. I mean,
I can't kill him for it, but
I mean, baseball's so reactionary. Like, it's hard to say, think of the situation, think of a ball's coming in, I'm not going to lean in, don't lean in. I mean, it's so much instant twitch in baseball that I part of me can't blame him for saying it's just natural instinct to try and do that and get on base. I mean, I think that's kind of what he meant when he said it's my job to get on base. Like, I think baseball players are made just naturally, you know, bred to act a certain way. And it's hard to just say, oh, this guy's got a perfect game, let me just sit back and let him throw three strikes over the middle. So, I mean, it was, you know, a risky pitch for Scherzer. It is what it is. I'm not going to kill the guy for it. I think it, you know, is it justifiable to say, what the fuck? I guess, but I wouldn't. I don't think he did anything that most players wouldn't have done. I'll put it that way.
And Scherzer is, he's your starting pitcher for the All-Star game for the East. How about for the National League? How about the American League?
No Royals, please.
Yeah, let's get some more Royals out there.
Archer? Chris Archer?
He got kind of whacked around on Sunday, but
yeah, he's been pretty good, though.
He's got some good sizzle for him. We'll talk about the Royals in a second. Pete Rose, the news that he actually bet on baseball now as a player. Does it change your opinion as to whether or not he should or should not be reinstated?
Yeah, and I was all for reinstating him, but you can't bet on teams on games you're playing in. I mean, that's just a slap. I mean, you know, whether you're betting for or against, you just can't. It's in the rules. He blatantly circumvented the rules and lied about it. I'm a believer, as I've stated many times in my Deflategate arguments, that lying just makes things worse, and burying it makes things worse. And I think after all the people that have defended him for all these years then find this out, I think he'll lose a lot of support.
Yeah, so, and I agree with you 100%.
But then the question becomes again, you know, does he belong in the Hall of Fame in some light? Probably. Not enshrined, but there should be something about him. And I'm also of the belief that steroid guys should not be kept out, because there's no way to know who and who wasn't. And a lot of the guys that have been found guilty was circumstantial, through like the Mitchell report and everything else, you know, leaked tests that weren't supposed to count, and different stuff like that. So I think there should be guys that get inducted, McGuire, A-Rod, Bonds, and it's just called out, right? So maybe they don't get the ceremony, but they're put in, and it's called out that they played during this, you know. So maybe the ceremony becomes the honor of it, not getting inducted. So it becomes, you know, you earn it, you're clean, we have no suspicion, you get a big ceremony, you get to do your speech. Hey, Barry Bonds, we're going to put you in, we're going to recognize you with a plaque, not a bust, and on it, it's going to say, you know, you played during the steroid era, and we're suspected to have used steroids during this time, but we can't discredit the amount of, you know, production that you provided during your time. So something along those lines, where they still get recognized, but maybe not enshrined.
I think it becomes less and less of an issue every year, but then something like this with Pete Rose comes out, where even after he made his big mea culpa and said, all right, I admit it, I bet on baseball as a manager. Never as a player, but as a manager. Well, now that's thrown out. So even if these guys come out after the fact, if they all lined up and said, yes, I took performance-enhancing drugs, how many times did A-Rod admit it? And yet there was more. I'm sick of hearing from liars and people who lie. Like, you and Todd Sinclair have a thing about punctuality, and I agree with that. But to me, liars are the worst. I just have a big problem with it, and you know, I'm disappointed in Pete. I wish he would have just admitted it and be done with it. The lie is always worse than the truth that you withhold. But anyway, so that Hey, man, we're just about out of time because it's late. It's summer. We've got things to do. We've got people to see. We've got sharks to catch. We've got all kinds of things to do. But this was a great show. I want to thank you, JR, for all the work. And Dan McGinn, too, for everything. You guys do a fantastic job and don't get near enough credit. So thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
And all right, so we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time. I'll figure out a guest. And it'll be somebody good, trust me, because they're always
Alex
good
Wright.
Guests. What?
Alex Wright.
Ah, sure. And we'll have, well, Todd Sinclair was on this week. He was pretty good, right? You guys admit that?
Yep.
Best referee, great guest. Fantastic. You'll be able to listen to this broadcast, of course, if you subscribe to the Kevin Kelly Podcast via iTunes, its own feed. This way, every time a new episode is released, it will conveniently be brought to you with a mint on your pillow. It's so nice and wonderful for you. So enjoy this episode and go back and listen to the archives. Check out the PTBN site for all the goodness that is going on there. And that's it. For Dan McGinn and for Justin Rosero, I'm Kevin Kelly. We'll see you next time on the Kevin Kelly Show, the Kevin Kelly Podcast here on Place to Be Nation, the website home, placetobenation.com. Oh, wait. What's the news about Carino?
Steve Carino told us that his favorite wrestler is Das Wunderkind.
Damn it.
But you sure can't beat my man.
Wake up to get ready to rig the thing I wore for the ass motorboating.
A tree fell on Greg Abbott.
You know, I'm only 50 now and the phone could ring at any time.
Basically, because she had Tommy John and had a strong arm, she gave these awesome hand jobs that he was like obsessed with.
This honey is from Hazel's Honey Hut.
But by the way, speaking of food and Bush,
I think Chris Jericho is who Michael Hayes would like to be.
Always had a lot of issues with Cox, or have you dealt with Cox better in the past?
I used to enjoy dealing with Cox. Will you do my wife and I the honor of purchasing
you?
Oh,
wait a minute.
I don't get butt hurt.
Bye.